On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake. Find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Lamonte Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the How To Podcast. I am Luke Anderson. With me, Ben Abbey. We are going to have a little bit more of a structure to these podcasts in 2023 because, you know, why not have goals and stuff and things? But we also want, we had a conversation, I don't know if it was during the podcast, after the podcast last month, but we want to have a little bit more focus on getting outdoors, doing things that are great. So today's How To Podcast will be how to find what to do with, and can you make money from sunstones? Ben, you're leading the charge on this. First of all, how are you doing today?
I'm very well today. The energy is high as I sit here right now. I know that I've got a TikTok that is up that has aggravated the 55 and older crowd that thinks they know a lot about paint. And so we're at a level where I'm going to drag out my content of education. So I'm really enjoying that facet of educating on a paint level.
Oh, there you go. So
that energy is being brought here where I get to talk about the fun things that I do and that you and I are going to go do in February. So
let's set this up. So you've talked about sunstones a few times. I know that we've mentioned it on podcasts. It's something that you have a passion for like no one else I know, because I've never talked to anybody else about sunstones. I come from a point where I really don't know anything. So I don't know how much you know about the science of, do they really come from the sun? Are they even stones? What is actually going on? Okay, we're telling stories here. How the hell did you get started with sunstones? Where did you get introduced? Where did the passion come from for this? Because I'm very curious about it.
Yeah. So it's actually kind of funny. First, when I think sunstones, I just think rocks in general, treasures on the ground, right?
Okay.
When I was 5-6 years old, that's when I started my outdoor experiences with my father. And in particular, deer season in Oregon would typically begin October 1. And it still does here in Oregon, October 1. Well, my sister's birthday is September 30th. Bless her heart, right? Bless her heart. She'll listen to this. And sorry, sis. Dad and I, boom, we are gone well before or on her birthday. So whatever birthday party she's having, Dad and older brother are not a part of that.
Can I say though, I have a younger sister. She has four older brothers. I think that would have been the best birthday gift ever, is getting rid of your brothers. Now, Dad, not so much, but your brother's leaving. Happy birthday to me.
Yeah, gotta go see it. Yeah, no problem.
I think that works for her.
So my I think my sister would look at it as some childhood trauma though. Or at least middle child, right? Like there's the middle child thing.
My brother is a middle child, and he never lets anybody forget about it. There's five kids in my family. Wouldn't that make three middle children? No, I'm exactly in the middle. So my life, shut up.
Okay. So as part of Dad and I going hunting, right, what Dad and I would do is we would collect rocks, find rocks as we're walking around. None of them sunstones, none of them precious gems typically, but they would be neat looking rocks, things like that. Quartz, maybe.
Look,
quartz
Dad, rock. This one looks like boobs.
You saw something. Yeah, there's something unique. Okay. That's all I'm going to say. But so that's where the fascination with just keeping my eye to the ground begins. As I go through life, you begin to pinpoint certain things that you're looking for, whether that's in scouting and being a Boy Scout and finding, you know, I never did I do the mineralogy? It doesn't matter. Anyway, the merit badge. So
do you still have your merit badges?
Oh yeah. We can talk about those.
I was just asking. That's all I needed to know. I like how embarrassed you are by that question. Like, I asked some stupid questions on this podcast. That was like the most direct, simple question I may have ever asked. And it hit right on the point where, like, you're red right now. Like, I'm looking at your face.
I am.
Like, you're so embarrassed. Like, you held on to it for a reason.
I mean, they're not, for the record, they're not like hanging up above my nightstand or anything like that. They are in a bin, but they are, they exist.
You don't have to defend yourself. I'm just asking, man. I gotta defend the blood. You are.
Okay, so.
It's right next to my Pinewood Derby car. It's in the same box.
Fucking dying. Okay, so.
It is though, right? That derby car's in there.
It's in there.
Okay.
So's the damn trophy.
Oh, winner. One thing about scouts, I always want to do the Pinewood Derby.
Oh golly. I can't. Okay, we're doing well today. I'm feeling this energy. So fast forward, we get done with my military service, all those things. And I certainly continued wanting to look for rocks.
Okay.
And after divorce, right prior to divorce.
You divorced your wife for Sunstones?
Not at all. Okay. Not at all. Okay. Not at all.
She hated them and you loved them.
It would have been like in 2017, 2018. So this is a few years before divorce. Me and my former best friend went on a duck hunting trip over to the space that these sunstones exist. We did not go to the sunstone collection area on that trip. However, as we drove in, I'm looking at the map and I see public sunstone collection area on the map. Like,
oh, this is a designated area.
Yeah, it's a designated. And we'll get to the reason why it's a designated area in a second. But so as I see it, I can tell that it would still be a drive from this road that is a what you'd call a main road. It'd be a drive. It'd be a journey into the high desert to go after this. So
you're looking at Eastern Oregon. What's the general area?
We are in the southeast at the base of Heart Mountain. Right? Okay.
So now use a landmark that people know where it is. So like from what's the nearest town?
75 miles north of Lakeview, Oregon.
Okay. Now so a town that people have heard of.
Yep.
How far from Bend?
The border of California and Oregon. You're 75 miles north and you are moving east toward into the central part of Oregon, but you're 75 miles north and just a little bit east.
Okay. If I were to take over like a forestry center and then hang out with the Bundys, how far from that are you? Like way down there?
No.
Not the Malheur National Forest.
No, Malheur is further east and north.
Okay.
Than this. This is
so you're kind of central Oregon on the California border.
Yeah, very near that, and to the degree that the Warner Mountain Range is the only. This is just a fun fact that I know. The Warner Mountain Range that is created that you cross over to get to this space is the only range that feeds the Great Basin instead of the Columbia Basin.
Oh, okay.
So this is, which is a cool thing when you think about it, because that water that's a long way to travel.
Yeah.
So
gravity's cool. Got
so it. Weird that I even know those facts. So, okay.
So you go duck hunting, you see the designated area, you still haven't gone, but you're curious now.
Gone. And then my friend and I, we would have a falling out. And I would return, so in our falling out with this friendship, ultimately I had come to the conclusion that I wanted to try and see if we could mend this friendship. And I knew that he was going to go duck hunting on the opener of duck season at that spot. So I was going to go out there and be there also with my dog, right? And see if he would want to chat with me, right? And we don't need to get into the story of why we fell out.
Or the divorce or anything. This is a heartbreaking story already. We've gotten divorce.
It's a healing journey.
Oh, okay.
It's a healing journey. Gotcha.
All right. This is the end of act one and everybody's sad. Now what do we do? if you've ever watched movie structure, it's going to get better. Then it's going to get a whole lot worse. And then Sunstones.
So then in that trip, on that trip that I would go to, me and my friend would not communicate. He would not make the active choice to communicate with me.
Did
and
the dogs smell each other's butts at least?
No.
Ooh, get, man, like, it's a real not, falling out.
And he absolutely knew I was there, right? And he did. And meanwhile, this is the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's nobody else. Like
seven people that go there in the entire year. You're the only two ever to be there at the same time.
I'm in my truck that's marked box painting. I mean, it's not a secret, you know? Yeah. So after that attempt, I actually swung over to the Sunstone area from the duck hunting spot.
Cool.
And that was where I would find my first couple of stones. And I was like, these things are everywhere.
So what the hell is a sunstone? So you go out there. So there's a designated area. It's on the map. You didn't know what they were. What actually are they?
Okay. So a sunstone is not rare in the world. In the world, a sunstone is a common stone that many can find.
Okay.
The Oregon sunstone is rare. And the reason it is rare is because of how it was made. And I'll go through that. So 15 million years ago, a volcano erupts at the in the Steen Mountains, most likely, I would bet, creating what is called Kiger Gorge, which is, it looks like God took an ice cream scooper and just carved this thing out of ice cream, right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Just super steep edges.
And ice cream everywhere.
That's 75 miles due east and a little bit north. The ash and lava travel to an ancient lake bed that is at the bottom of Heart Mountain.
So it would have been a lake at the time?
Yeah, it would have been a lake at the time. Yep. At the time, it would have been a relatively deep lake, actually, because Heart Mountain elevates about 2,000 vertical feet, maybe even 2,500, like straight up. It commands the ground. It's impressive.
Okay.
So the lava and the ash make contact with this mineral, a very common mineral that we find. It's what makes glass. It is what makes tile. It is called feldspar, F-E-L-D-S-P-A-R, feldspar.
Feldspar, cool.
Feldspar. And not uncommon at all. But what was uncommon is that when it made contact with it, there was, in this one very specific spot, a vein of copper that was there also. And so what you see in IG photos and reels that I make, or even TikToks, what you will see is that there will be an ambering pink coloring that sometimes is yellow, but depending on how dense the copper is, that has fused with the feldspar and that lava at the same time, it erupted right on contact, like, and shattered like glass. And it's like a 2 mile area. 2 square miles that is this area where this stone exists, right? Now, we've known about this since modern man, right? So it's been picked
up. Yeah, somebody walked over it and went, cool.
Well, and you will find Native American arrowheads there because this is also a space where ancient hunting grounds exist because there was a lake. They would have been hunting the duck migration and goose migration, things like that, antelope, all that fun stuff. So those things exist here too. So you'll find arrowheads in your travels. It's very, very neat, but it's relatively flat ground sagebrush that sits at the hip to, you know, shoulder height. I mean, it can be pretty dense. The neat part about it though, is that every year, because you are in the high desert, the winds come across, the snow hits it, it melts it. The ground changes every single year, every single day. And so new stones can just bubble to the surface.
And nobody's out there digging for these. There's no...
Oh, they are.
Shovels? Like you go down with a shovel?
There are whole mining operations that exist. And so know that in the public collection area, it's about 2 square miles. It's a designated area on the map. And then there are what's called the Spectrum Mine, and then there's other private mines. Like you and I could go buy a
chunk of it and mine it.
Well, like a little spot and say, boom, this is my claim. And like old gold time, you know, gold rush times is the same thing. And because they are a precious gem and they are rare because of the copper and how it was formed.
And the geography limits it to one spot on the planet.
Yeah, one spot on the planet. It's insane. So the Spectrum mine, you will see like probably call it up to 10 RVs of these guys that are there. They pay to basically sift the stuff that the Spectrum mine is digging out deep down in the ground, right? Yeah. And they're pulling up earth, and then they're finding stuff. And like the Spectrum mine, say the largest one that my daughter has found is 90 carats, right? Okay. To give it a weight, the 90 carats is equivalent to 18 grams. Okay. 1 gram is 5 carats. So 18 grams, it's a solid stone. I mean, it's impressive.
How big is that in your hand?
Probably about that big.
So like a quarter.
So a little bit like right at a half dollar.
Okay.
Right at an American half dollar, sure. Right in there. And then, but relative density to that.
Sure, yeah.
But the Spectrum mine, you will be paying for the opportunity to sift their product. You pay half the cost of what it would retail for to take that gem offsite.
And there's somebody, right? Like, you have to probably monitor that pretty well when everything slips in your pockets.
Absolutely. And do not, here's the other thing. Don't go walking on somebody's claim. Like it's wild, wild west out there. I mean, it is a claim. It is their property. So they own it.
What's the dollar value of that 18 gram?
So there was a website that was forwarded to me, and I think the lady that picked up about a 90 carat spot paid half, and she paid, and this is probably 10 years ago, 10, 12. She paid like $200. For the half of it. So it's a $400 uncut gem, right? Yeah. So because what people do is they will make earrings, jewelry, but you need a large gem to make the cut,
sure,
to be able to polish it out and all those things. So they are of relative value.
So your daughter went out there and picked up a $400 bill.
Yeah, paid for gas for sure. Sure. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, well over gas. And then the rest of what you're picking up are a lot of shillers, they call them. Like they'll be, call them less than a gram, you know, less than a carat, you know, a quarter carat, things like that. That's the majority of what you're picking up. And then every once in a while you just happen upon one that's, oh my gosh, you know. And the other thing that you're looking for is color, right? Because you're gonna see out there, you're gonna, like, when I say you're seeing them, they are everywhere,
as far as you can see in a 2 mile square area.
Absolutely. Like, I have pictures where the ground, the sand itself has ground these down so much that they are a part of the sand texture.
Sure,
right? Yeah. They're like, oh, this fish tank behind me, I know they can't see it, but the medium that's at the bottom of that is from the public collection area. And there are, like, I mean, tiny little sunstones that are in there, like probably 1,000 of them sitting in that little guy. Okay. Right. But they're not of value because they're clear. There's nothing to them. They're uncut, all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So you go out there on, like, is there a better time of year? Like, so I guess you're saying, you said that you went out there in January or New Year's and there is permafrost on it, so that you can't find anything.
No, so, I found a couple underneath some sage, but yeah, I mean, you're not finding them in mass.
So, but you want to be out there, because we're talking about this now at the end of January, because you're looking at going when it first thaws, you get kind of first look at it, right?
Now we're getting somewhere. Right?
Well, I've got something holding my ears apart besides, just air.
that's true.
Okay. Right? So, this is the adventure that you and I are planning, right? So we want to go out there first look. How many people have that same idea?
Nearly zero.
Okay. Okay. So we can go out there and have pure isolation. May see some people at the Spectrum mine. There may be some Yahoo with a claim. Have you considered making a claim to a?
Not to this point, because I'm having so much fun in the public collection area, and the gems that we have found have been of good size. The biggest one I have found, I think, is about 30 to 40 carats, somewhere in there.
Okay.
But it's got a lot of cool iridescence.
Yeah.
So it's like 5 gram little rock. I mean, it's good chunk. So when the kids and I did this last year, Hannah had taken, I had already gone on at least one trip in October. And then I had to wait through the winter. And then by the time we got to January, my son and I went on our first trip. And the reason it was just me and B was because, Hannah had taken Peyton to Disney for a girls' weekend to Disneyland.
Sucks
right
to be them.
So I was like, yeah, have at it. Go for it. I'll take the kiddo. Let's do this thing. So B and I get out there, and nighttime temperatures are below freezing, sure, right? But daytime temps are like at 40 degrees. And the radiant sun on the sand that is the medium, it does warm up and it's comfy. I mean, you're not uncomfortable unless the wind's blowing. Yeah. So we found lots of stones. There was no snow. And this is in January of last year. Found tons of stones. And then the very next weekend was my weekend with the kiddos. I bring P and B out. And that's when, so we went from
January. And for kids that don't know their names, it's Peanut and Butter, right?
Close. Peyton and Benjamin.
Oh, yeah. That's
close.
That's close.
So we would do multiple trips over five between the months of January, February, March, and April. Okay. By the time we get to May, I have a dog, right? A big and a little one, because, you know, share custody with one dog with Hannah. But by the time you get to May in Oregon, it's warming up. Snakes and scorpions are coming out. I don't want to have my kiddos sitting there poking at the ground and brush.
Yep.
For all the unsafe, stupid crap that I do in this world, I promise. And I say that as a person that did bring a scorpion home in October, but like I do things that I try and do as safely as possible.
Okay.
In regards to my kids.
So there's no risk for snakes and scorpions in February.
No. I mean, if you did happen upon one, it's deep buried and typically it's not going to happen. There's no way.
So now when you show up, you just bring in, I think you said this, and maybe I was drunk for one of the conversations we had. Are you going barefoot? Like how are you geared up? How are you geared up for this trip? The barefoot thing is still in my mind, 'cause I think that you said that.
So if the sun is out and the wind is calm, I do enjoy grounding myself in this earth barefoot.
Okay.
Like it does not hurt. It's not it's like walking on sand. Very like it is. Imagine ancient lake bed, right? It's that medium. It's silty. It has a silty soft to it. And what happens is that silty soft continues to settle, and the rocks, the stones, the gems
are
what is exposed, right? Yeah. So.
The math all checks out on that. So you bring in rakes, you bring in gloves, you bring in how are you gearing up for this trip?
And good question. So, what I would say is the short answer is yes, I've brought all of those things. What I have found is we do not need gloves. You're not digging that hard at anything. So I don't typically bring gloves anymore. I've brought a garden rake. What I think I will bring that would be a little bit more helpful is something that's got a little bit deeper tines. Because if you think about a garden rake, it's typically about 2.5 to 3 inch tines. Well, if you take a clam rake, they have closer to 6-inch tines. So you're
digging. Yeah, they're probably only 4.5. You're exaggerating.
Listen, it's
just kidding. I actually got, so this is what I use for clam digging, is I've got one that's got the 3-point tine on one side and the little hoe on the other side that you'll get for like an edger, I guess was what it'd be for. But that's what I use for clam digging.
Would probably like, but yeah. So, and then I do bring a shovel.
Okay.
Whether it's a true, you know, spade shovel, you want a spade shovel because you're digging down. You don't want a flat edge shovel.
Yeah.
If you have, and then I've also brought little hand garden tools.
Sure.
A little, like it's one side of it has 3 prongs. That's about, 4 or 5 inches. Yeah. And then the other side has a little backhoe kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I have, but I have it on a full.
You're on a full. Yeah, I got you.
Full perfect. Shaft.
That would work. Yeah. The other thing is, when it comes to walking around, I don't want to be bombarded with all this stuff just like on me. Right. So what I ended up doing about halfway through last year, you see these parents, and I've probably become one. They're the soccer parents. They show up at the soccer field and they've got a pull cart.
Oh yeah.
It's got the big fat tires and it's cloth and it's got a mesh bottom.
We have one.
I have one
great too, for camping.
For sunstones.
You bring it for Sunstones?
I totally bring it for Sunstones.
So what you're describing to me is clam. So you're going clam digging. You're going clam digging. You're digging for butter clams is what you're telling
me. Yeah, it's very similar. So, and you got to think, right? So here's this grown adult walking around with a pole wagon, right? Yeah. And some garden tools, just totally focused on the effing ground, loving his life, right? And like sometimes I'll have my phone with me. I'll have a little stereo, like a little boombox stereo. I got some tunes playing. I got water with me. I got my lunch. Cause what I do is where we camp is in the public collection area.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. You're okay to camp. It's technically BLM land.
Got it.
There's also at the little spot where there's an information center. We'll go through that first. There's 6 day use areas in February and March. You could use the day use area to camp. There's nobody that's going to be policing that.
Yeah.
Like technically it's against the rules, but there's like picnic tables with like concrete pads. Like it's a developed area right there that is, it announces what it is. So, what else do you need to know?
For camping, 0 degree camping in, cause you're saying, you know, below freeze, not 0 degree, but below freezing camping, how much gear are you bringing?
So, you know, okay.
Because it's how long of a drive from Portland or Salem?
From Salem, it is 5.5 hours.
Okay. So it's not worth going. It's not a day trip. It's a full camp.
No, not a day trip. Yep. Although, just so we're clear, the kids and I did do it in a day last year. For once,
you have to let the kids drive at least half of it so you get a little rest.
Oh, golly. That was a brutal trip. I'm not going to lie. That hurt the sleep pattern.
But, I'm confident of that.
But for those 3 hours, right, we slayed some stones. We were out there and it was a mission to just, here we are for 3 hours, get the stones. It wasn't making content or anything like that. It was get the stones. So 5.5 hours from the Salem area, you're probably talking about at least a 6 to 6.5 hour drive from the Portland area, down to the deep southeast or deep central east, you know, of Oregon. And the ground, so barriers of entry, right? Because I think that the part of what you and I talked about was the things that I do are relatively low barriers of entry.
You already said no snakes, no scorpions. If you go the right time of year, which is
obviously
makes a big impact. What else?
It does. You know, you don't need to have 4-wheel drive if you're going. The roads, they are dirt roads, but they are improved dirt roads. Think big cattle operations out there.
It's high desert, so there's not going to be anything super gnarly. Okay. Yeah,
exactly. What else? Always bring lots of water.
Even when it's cold, you're evaporating.
And the other thing too that people don't think about is where we're at. We are at 5,000 feet of elevation at the base. Yeah. Right. By the time
part in the high deserts.
Well, and then you get to the top of that. You're, you know, in the backdrop, we will have Heart Mountain. That's sitting 6,500 to 7,500 feet of elevation. So there is this arid area that is draining you of fluids. So be ready to stay hydrated as you're out and about. That is important.
Does Coors Light work as a decent substitute for water? Because I usually do that when I'm camping. I'm just checking.
You bring your own. I don't.
Just checking.
Yeah, it's for you. What else? I do bring a Mr. Buddy propane heater, right? In case the extremities just get to be a little too much and I just want to get warmed up real quick. But typically by the time we're going to get into February, our daytime temperatures, spring is on the, you know, it's coming. So we're right around the corner. So it's getting to be a lot warmer.
I didn't
have to turn the heater on even in January with the permafrost and the snow on the ground. And it was below freezing the whole time when I was out there. So I stayed warm enough.
Okay. So you take this trip, you drive 5.5 hours across the state of Oregon. You go down there, you set up a camp for freezing temperatures. You go out barefoot, walking through the cold sand. It's dry. You have to drink a ton of water. You do all this, you pick up a few rocks.
Bring your chakas or your tivas.
Yeah. So, Keen. We're a Keen family here.
Keens. Yeah, you Keens. I get Keens.
So, You get pick up all these stones. What are you doing with them? You said that your daughter found one that has a $400 value. I imagine she's still hanging on to that.
Oh yeah, we polished that one out. Yeah.
Okay.
So that we will not that. So my hope for the stones that we find that are of relative size overall, the big ones, one, and they have a lot of color to them. We have a jar that is these, and some of them aren't even that big, but they are the keepers. And it's there's a jar that's labeled keepers. Gotcha. They have the most color to them. There's something relatively unique about that one that we said, I want to hold on to that one for now, at least. So we get home. To give you an idea, in about a 3 to 4 hour span, you can pick it, like, and I say pick because you're picking rocks.
Sure.
You can pick a pint size Tupperware of stones, okay, right?
Per person?
Yeah. Oh, no. Maybe between two or call it two active pickers.
You well, know, you've got two kids with you, so you don't have the most. Yeah.
The most motivation. Now, what I will say is bringing your children is excellent. This is a great fun activity for the kids. And the reason why is A, it's relatively safe. B, they are lower to the ground. They can get better.
Their backs are stronger than ours or less used than ours.
Well, and at any given time, you're in this flat space. You could be a quarter of a mile away from your truck and your camp, right?
Yeah.
But it's in eye shot. You are not out of eyesight of the space. Because as you're looking to the ground, you do kind of get disoriented on which direction you've moved, right? Like you get like, it's like, wait, where am I? And you kind of look up and you're like, oh, shoot, I'm way over here. Like, and it's a game. So what I like about it for the kids is we will basically get to a spot, put the little wagon, right, that's in a eyesightable distance of like, say, 100 to 200 yards.
Yep.
They go scatter, do their own little discovery, right? And I'm out there doing my thing. I do bring a sifting box that my father made. It's got made out of 2x4 and a quarter inch wire mesh, and then two handles. And we load that up, shake it down a couple of times. We have found some really quality stones doing that. But honestly, some of the best ones we found are just right on top.
Just sitting right there.
Sitting right there like little nuggets of love. They're so cool.
Okay. So you have your keepers. So you got your keep. You come back. Yeah. Obviously, I can hear the enthusiasm. And you're going, how many times a year do you go now?
This last year, I think last year.
Are you embarrassed again?
No.
Did you get your merit badge for it?
I think what it is when I say it out loud, it's like, oh, I did that a lot. You might have an OCD problem, right? Where you're just ready to bounce.
Anything that revitalizes you. This is the direction we're taking the podcast, right? We're trying to get people out into nature, low point of entry. All you need to do this, it sounds like, is time.
Yeah, is time. And
the enthusiasm for it.
It's honestly a weekend's worth of time. And you're going to have a good time.
A lifetime worth of memories.
So we get home, we wash off the stones. We typically take a picture after we've washed them, just a quick rinse wash, nothing crazy.
Yeah.
Shake off the little dust on them and all that fun stuff. Identify the ones, kind of we typically will be like, because you can see them, which ones are going to have some more color, which ones might not. So we sift out the ones that we think are going to be keepers, and then we start turning the stones. I got a rock tumbler.
Yeah, my brother has one of those, I believe.
Yeah. I got it on Amazon for $60 and it comes with all four types of grit.
Can I just say, like, you take the freaking rock tumbler, because my brother was just showing me, this is maybe 2 weeks ago, he showed me some rocks. You take any plain ass rock
and
tumble it, dude, that is something.
Yeah.
That's some rocks are pretty stupid. Like, you throw them out there, you're like, never mind. Like pick them out of your yard.
You can turn any rock that you polish out through a process. I mean, it gets pretty, way pretty.
Yeah.
So to give an idea, for most of the sunstones, it takes for that amount of stones,
your pint,
probably looking at least a month to take it from unpolished feldspar sunstone to a polished, pretty, you can see through it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you can see all of the color, all the prisms, all of that fun stuff. for those of you that are watching, I literally today is
listening. This is recorded for audio.
Anybody listening, today is January 26th. This morning, I did post a sunstone IG reel, and you can see some of the sunstones that we found last year out there with the kids. And it was just fun. So then what I've also done, the next question is, what do I do with them? So, yep. You know, I've turned some of them into little pieces of jewelry, whether they are in a little pouch that is just showing the piece. I've contacted a lady that makes jewelry out of just polished stones. Whether she does this process where it's like you melt copper metal and it kind of like encapsulates this thing. It's neat art, actually. And then the other thing is I have a rock shop here in Salem, the Cosmic Exchange. The owner's name is Sarah, and then Joey owns a card shop down below in the basement.
Okay.
And they sell my rocks. They sell these sellable tumbled rocks.
And these are not the keepers. You got the keepers that are high value. So like, and you've probably gotten pretty good at assessing them. What are you selling a non-keeper for?
About $4 a stone.
Okay.
$4 a stone. Nothing crazy. I mean, now,
you know, and is that after the consignment agreement is you get $4?
Oh, I guess. Okay. So in the consignment agreement, they are selling them for $4. I'm taking $3.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. So $3 a rock and a pint fills up. So if you do a pint, the largest one that you've ever found is a silver dollar. You're bringing home, what is that? 80 stones.
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, to give you an idea, a pint jar ends up weighing out to, I want to say, almost 400 grams. So whatever, I can't do that math off the top of my head now. But I mean, it's a sizable amount. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But so for all the stones that we found this last year, it took the whole year, literally a 12-month period, to get them all polished.
Sure.
So what I would do is I would polish a batch, take them to the rock shop, polish a batch, you know, in total, take them to the rock shop.
I don't really know the polishing process. Like I said, my brother was just showing me the other day, but how many rocks you throw in the tumbler and is just running?
Yeah, the tumbler's it's running right now with some quartz and some jasper that I'd found. But it takes 7 days. So there's four different levels of grit.
Sure.
Level one is about a 7 day turn. Level two, maybe 5 to 7. Level three, you're getting more.
And it just runs 24/7. Just toss how many rocks you throw in there.
I would say as probably about half of that amount.
So you bring half back. Pint.
Yeah. Half pint. Okay. You're kind of judging it based on the space that you have to fill in whatever the size. I need to get a bigger tumbler if I'm 100%.
Yeah, I got you.
Give me a reason. But no,
twist my arm. I'll get
twist my arm.
Yeah.
For any listeners out there, I'll put it in my Amazon wish list, and you know, feel free
there to
donate.
There you go. There you go.
Shameless plugs are also becoming a part of this.
Oh, good, 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 good. All right, so I mean, sounds like there's some value in it. You're getting. I mean, tell me what's the value of that pint of rocks? Then what did we decide on? So if you go on a trip, you're having fun. You're getting connected to the earth. You go to a cool part of the country. I don't know how many people on the west side of the mountains travel east and really get to see the high desert over there. So you're getting all of that value from it, but you're making some money on it too, right? You're getting $100?
Yeah. I would say a few hundred. It's no matter what. Aside from the $5 to $6 gas prices, you are going to pay for gas.
Okay.
In that space. But see, the other thing too is like my dad and I went on a trip. He took a handful of stones and he just kept them.
Well, like, sure. No, I get that. I'm saying this is on top of it. You're going to keep some kick-ass rocks.
Yeah.
You get to do all the trip, but like there is somewhat of a financial incentive. There's a value to it. So.
And if you, in hypothetical, let's say you go to the public collection area, you're like, man, I'm not really finding, you know, anything of size, you know, as I'm walking around looking, go to the Spectrum Mine.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when you pull up to the Spectrum Mine, you're going to feel out of place. That's like, just
well, sure.
You're going to feel very like, These are rock hounds. This is what they do, right? They're going to come out. They're going to have their scraggly beard. It's unkept. They've been living in solace and just digging earth for months.
How much money are these guys making? Like, obviously there's some reason to be there.
Operation, so they're making money. I mean, they are.
Well, sure.
I don't know exactly, but yeah. I mean, it's enough that it is a named mine that attracts people to go sift their product for them.
Well, right? we'll talk to somebody when we go down there. I mean, this seems like an adventure worth taking. So I'm in, me and you. I'll see if my brother wants to go. He's got a rock tumbler.
Depending on what weekend we go, I may have the kiddos, right?
Sure.
So it's, and I'll bring my dog because the dog goes with me everywhere. Yep. And you're just wandering the space. It's right. You're just picking what you find. It's
we'll coordinate it. I would say I'm excited. I'm curious. I would say curious is the number one emotion feeling
that I have right now. The curiosity is there. And then what happens is if you enjoy the ambiance of what this area is, it is very it's solace. It is, yeah. You are, there is nothing around you. Like when I was there in January, even because the ground was frozen, the mine was shut down. There was nobody there. Yeah. So I was the only person 40 miles around me. I mean, that's a cool feeling.
I mean, if you're the only person around for a quarter of a mile, depending on the thickness of the brush when you're hunting, it feels like you're the only person
on earth.
Yeah. It's wild. It's a unique experience. So if you've never had that too, so, all right, well, cool. Let's create the adventure. You and I will talk over the next month. We'll bring out some recording equipment, talk to some people that are down there. I'd love to find somebody from the Spectrum Mine. I'd like to know what the hell goes on there. I'm sure we can find somebody that's got, not just a great story to tell, but I imagine we can find somebody that's got a miner's accent. Yee-haw.
So that's exactly when I say it. That's what I hear.
I'm the old prospector.
Yosemite Sam, right?
Yeah, playing banjo. No, not quite the Yosemite Sam. I feel like a little less shoot 'em up, a little more. I brought my banjo.
Get off my property.
You get off. That's my claim. It's not land. It's claim. You get out of here.
It's good. It's good. But yeah, you can purchase the land through the BLM and have a state
Bureau claim. Of Land Management for anybody. Bureau it's not, Man- not like a, super bowel movement,
no,
or anything like that. BLM.
The other thing that people don't realize is that this is one of the ways that our government makes money off of federal land.
Sure.
Right. Yep. So Spectrum Mine pays a price to be on that space to our federal lands. Mm. It's, you know, people don't think about how our government makes and generates wealth also.
Well, let's do this. See if you can get a hold of anybody from the BLM. It'd be great to talk to somebody. I'd like to, you know, get some inside perspective on more on the Spectrum Mine, more on that. See if you can reach out to some folks that are down there. We'll figure out the weekend that we'll go. And I think it'd be fun to figure out the people you need to talk to answer the questions you have. I want to see the space. I'd love to go down there and see if we can get somebody that's actually mining and talk to them. If we run into any other people, but I guess I don't know who to talk to because I don't know enough to do the digging. So is that cool? That's homework fair. Assignment?
Yeah, I can do that.
All right. And for everybody listening, all you have to do is kind of follow along. We'll, take some pictures, shoot some video. I'm sure you can use.
So on the next episode.
Yeah. The next episode, we'll do like a full breakdown of this. But throughout the process, we'll do. You've got all the socials. What are you going to do? It's TikTok, IG.
So I'll get things up on TikTok.
At Box sure. Dad.
At the Box Dad. The other thing, too, is my IG, and I build out my Instagram stuff. Know that for those that are listening, it's going to become more of me and the kids, the adventures that we go on. You're going to see Becky and Ski on TikTok doing the comedy bits and the paint education over on TikTok. So it's going to be more.
So Instagram and this podcast, we're going back to nature.
Yep, we're taking
more adventures, things that you can do within a stone's throw.
Say it.
Stone's throw of your home here in Western Oregon or wherever you are. So yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm very curious to see what it's going to be like. So for the next,
I'm excited that you're curious.
Yeah, the next episode of the podcast will be the adventure. So I appreciate everybody listening to this. You can find past episodes that are a little bit more of me and Ben just rambling. But you can find those on Odyssey.com, on 1080thefan.com, wherever you find your podcasts, and then of course follow Ben on his social medias. And if this goes well, who knows, you might even convince me to start posting things on social media. But for now
it's baby steps.
That's all you can do. All right, well, hey, you can listen to me on the radio, 1080thefan.com, or on the Odyssey app. There, Sinner and Saint is my show. Ben, all over the social medias. If you need your house painted, call Box Painting in the Salem Kaiser.
Or if you're looking for a franchise, we got to talk about that.
Oh yeah, don't forget. Yeah. If you want to start your own painting business, and here's what Ben is selling. If you want to own your own business and have a dedicated business plan, that the entire goal of Box Painting franchisees is to have work-life balance. Ben, how often do you work on Saturdays?
I work zero.
How many Sundays do you work throughout the year?
Zero. Okay.
So if you want work-life balance, weekends off, that is the game plan. When was the last time you picked up a paintbrush, Ben?
Prior to 2017. So 2016 was the last time, and I've owned my business since 2000.
So you can own your own business. It is a painting company. You don't have to pick up a paintbrush. You don't have to work Saturdays. You don't have to work Sundays. Sounds like a pretty good deal, and gives you more time to go on adventures like our Sunstone Expedition. Ben, thanks as always.
Always.
No, and most importantly, thank you for listening, Ben's sister and Ben's dad. Maybe Ben's ex-wife.
They'll give a listen.
Estranged friends and lovers of Ben.
It was a sad story in the beginning.
Hey, we'll see how it ends. This is the middle part. This is the end of Act Two. Act Three is this whole adventure. Maybe it's a sequel. I don't know what it is, but
who knows, right?
We're off the structure. All right, we're done. Everybody have a great day. Bye-bye.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.